if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast 155. This is our 2021 Honda Classic plus magical Kenya Open tips and picks episode. Paul Williams and Barry O'Hanrahan join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss this week's PGA and European Tour action. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning, guys.
Morning.
This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit begambleaware.org for more information. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world-famous Golf Betting System website with our in-depth betting previews, masses of tournament statistics and our predictor models, all available completely free of charge with no paywall. Please subscribe to this podcast and drive the popularity of the show. We are available on social media, on Twitter. Paul is at Golf Betting. Barry is at A Good Talk Golf. And I am at Bamford Golf. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. Plus, look out for the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. I actually managed to get the Honda Classic show out yesterday. And that's gone down really well with subscribers actually thanking me for getting the show out on a Monday. So I'm going to continue to try and do that where and when I can. It all depends on how quickly I can actually get my tips written in effect. Now, you guys, as listeners, power this podcast. So we need your 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are from in the review. Secondly, if you are in the growing band of YouTube listeners, please subscribe and like the show. Right, I've got three here to go through, chaps. First one, so much detail, 5 stars. Only been listening to the latest few, but already hooked. In-depth stats and detail about the players and courses in upcoming tournaments. It gives you a great understanding of which way your bets could go, which in turn makes watching the tournaments even more exciting and interesting. Only addition for me, if you had time, would be a quick 5 to 10 minute recap post-tournament to review how bets went. That could be dangerous. Bridges the gap to the all-exciting next release on the Tuesday. Keep up the good work and keep the good tips coming. That is from J13 Ashton.
What's
in Great Britain.
What's the level up after parental advice? Was it parental
explicit advice? Explicit. Yeah.
I think we already are, to be honest.
Yeah, explicit. Yeah. I'm just thinking if we recorded one post the event, there'd need to be another category.
It'd be too raw. I mean,
it would be a challenge. Time wise, it'd be a challenge, but language wise, it'd be a hell of a challenge.
We live in the wrong part of the world, don't we? Effectively, the goal finishes at what, midnight some nights. I mean, if it's on the West Coast, 2 a.m., you're not pulling a pod together for that. And of course, we are instantly onto the next tournament, which has to come out on a Monday. So, it's time. But thank you, J13 Ashton, for that review. Very, very good. Keep listening, of course. Now, another one here. Useful tips, 5 stars. Useful tips and good analysis. Great for picking out top 20, 30 multiples. Steve, though, you need to sort out your Neiman pronunciation. It is Wacky Neiman.
Nice.
I must admit, my pronunciation of players and Joaquin Neiman in particular is awful. So,
what's your normal pronunciation?
I go Joaquin. Joaquin. You're joking, Neiman.
You must be joking.
Do you know what? I've actually been practicing Joaquin Neiman over the weekend.
Very good.
So there you go.
You got it now, mate.
That is from McGrogstagram, and he is in Great Britain. So, McGrogstagram, thank you for the tip on Joaquin. I've actually tipped in this week, so hopefully Joaquin goes well for me. Now, I've got one last one here, and this one is an absolute classic. I'm loving this. It is entitled, I'm a Barry O'Hanra fan. And it's 5 stars. Wow, what a podcast. There really is nothing more comforting than listening to these 3 heroes give their in-depth analysis and tips for the golf week ahead. If you're interested in golf betting, then their fantastic content will resonate with you, and you might even learn a thing or two on the way. Never change, chaps. It really is superb. And that is from T65 and Ties, and he is in the UK. And he's definitely, Barry, a O'Hanra fan.
That's it's pretty awesome. Good start to the Tuesday morning to hear that. Thank you very much.
Brilliant stuff. No, enjoyed those. Very good. Thank you.
Keep them coming, that's all I can say. And we did get a serious influx from Ireland last week. I will get to them. Just keep them coming. It does really help to get the podcast to a situation where we effectively get more downloads and more people listening, and it's driven by these reviews. So please keep them coming. Right, let's talk about last week. Barry, you tipped up Lee Westwood, who came very, very close. And Paul, you were on the nemesis that is Paul Casey, who generated a rather nice each-way return for you. And of course, over in Qatar, you also had an each-way return with Chris Paisley. So all in all, apart from myself, naturally, it wasn't too bad a week for the podcast in terms of the tips.
Mm. Yeah, no. Westy played really well, didn't he? 2 weeks on the trot that he's been rubbing shoulders with the big boys and showing that he can still do it. Very impressive.
That hurt a bit. I mean, it took Thomas playing like incredible golf over the weekend. Thomas is amazing to watch when he's like that. Just absolute full flow. You know he's not going to miss the shot. The only shock about Sunday was that little short putt he missed. But other than that, I mean, wow. You got to tip the hat to him.
Yeah.
Took the breaks when he got them. Like that tee shot on 18 could have easily just sprung left. But it didn't. So, like, yeah. Those are the things you need to go right for you to win. Unfortunately for Westy, just didn't quite have it. As he said himself, he said just wasn't quite feeling it that day. And I mean, he did incredibly well to get his ball round in that number on Sunday with the way he was hitting the ball. So close, but yet so far. But still, like, what was it, 85-1 place return is an acceptable. Loss mitigator, I guess, or feeling of loss, you know. It was a great tournament.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Sunday was some entertainment. I mean, with the mess that was going on between Bryson and Westy on the front nine, and Bryson topping it, and then Westy hitting the big balloon ball to the right. I mean, it was just drama.
Mm. That final putt, Westwood's final putt on the final green, though he couldn't win the tournament at that point. $500,000 he won.
Did I read that he's earned $2.8 or $2.7 million in his last 2 outings?
Oh yeah, big bucks. But yeah, that final one putt, $500,000 difference between making that 14, 15 fur.
You just knew he was going to make it though after the way the whole day went. You know, just the irony of golf. So look, a good week for Westy. Great week for the Players' Championship. I felt a little bit sad that they seemed to overwater the course a little bit on Friday.
Yeah.
It just got that bit soft as a reaction to Thursday. Mm. But there could have been some possible weather coming in or like extra wind coming in that they were protecting against. So it's always on a knife edge, and you could see how Sawgrass gets firmer and browner and drier throughout the day. So you just can't start at that level, unfortunately, or the course would be
I mean, we said on the pod last week, I also kept mentioning JT throughout and saying that I clearly hadn't backed him. But I said on the pod last week that I thought it'd be quite lush, that golf course. I was genuinely shocked when there was that level of firmness and fieriness on the Thursday. And yeah, I think if they'd have kept that, it would have become pretty unplayable, wouldn't it? If they'd have really let that golf course, like you said, it was on a knife edge even on the Thursday.
Thursday was close, but it was phenomenal entertainment. But like, I'd say it is the craziest tightwalk rope to make when you're trying to balance a golf course, to especially one that changes so much throughout the day. You have to be so careful, because you could have a few hours of play where the golf course is completely unplayable. Balls won't stop anywhere. Overall, nailed it. I thought it was a great players, and it'll be a memorable Sunday above more of the recent ones. So, that's a win for us as fans.
With Westwood in mind, top seven now, or top nine in the Ryder Cup Team Europe, Hatton, Fleetwood, Rahm, McIlroy. And what Westwood has done, he's just propelled himself. We've got Westwood now, Casey's now in the automatic spots, Victor, Matthew Fitzpatrick, and Victor Perez, who got his first ever top 10 on US soil in the players. On the US side, it's DJ, Bryson now up to two, JT up to three, Brooks at four, Colin Morikawa at five, and Xander at six. That's not bad. That's not bad top six there, is it? Not
an incredible team, isn't it?
Not too bad. Patrick Reed hasn't even qualified so far. He's relying on the captain's pick.
Captain America. He'll get in,
won't he? Crazy. You can see Reed's definitely in. I think Spieth will be in there as well, especially with Mickelson and no Woods. Very unlikely they'd pick Phil. So, yeah, Reed and Spieth, you can see that coming a mile off. In terms of the podcast, it was our biggest podcast of the year. So thanks to each and every one of you that listened. We're flying on the podcast. We're actually up 25% year on year on the full amount of downloads that we had for 2021 players against 2020 players. So as I keep saying, it's you guys that drive this podcast. So thank you for that. Now, I kept mentioning with the players last week, I said McIlroy had been sixth for approach the week before, or the outing before. Webb Simpson had been fifth for approach the week before he won. I just thought I'd read these out, because mental notes and physical notes need to be made for the 2022 players. You actually listened to that, because you picked Paul Casey, Paul, who was seventh for strokes gained approach the outing before. You picked Lee Westwood, Barry, who was second for strokes gained approach the outing before at Bay Hill. And Justin Thomas was also second for strokes gained approach at the WGC concession. So, I love overcomplicating my tips. It seems quite a simple thesis, really. You just need to pick a very good player who is absolutely striping it with their irons before they get to TPC Sawgrass. And you're not going to be a million miles away if you pick those players.
Yeah, the clues were there, weren't they? But yeah, you know, ultimately, he still had to execute the shots when push came to shove, and he really wanted it, Justin, didn't he? That was, you know, something to kind of. He's had a rough couple of months, hasn't he? And you know, you could see how much it meant to him, and how much he really did want to win that tournament. So, hats off to him.
The one thing I'll say about JT is that he was striking the ball so pure that it didn't matter that he wasn't hitting as many fairies as he'd ideally like to have. He was able to hit great shots from the slightly non-ropey lies from non-fairway that he had. He was just hitting it so, so well.
Yeah.
And then, you know, got it all together on the weekend, you know.
That course just eats people up, though, doesn't it, Barry? Absolutely. I mean, it ate Tony Finau up in the first four holes on the Thursday.
Yeah, it's a brilliant golf course. I mean, we all know it. We get to see it every year, so you kind of know what's coming, and you know what potential it has for drama. And it was there all the way through Sunday, right through to the end. From the very beginning of the day, there was drama. Admittedly, created a bit by Westy and Bryson starting like a couple of hackers, but. Overall, like, it's great. Like, bring on the players next year. I'm kind of glad the whole clamour around major status kind of was a bit quieter this week, and it jumped up a bit when it got exciting. But I think it does well sitting on its own in its own category. Like, it's the strongest field in golf, the biggest prize money. Like, there's enough things going for it to kind of make it give it its own pedestal to stand on. It's great for that. I think if it gets mixed in with majors, it might get, I don't know, PGA'd, you know, towards the bottom of them. Who knows? But,
I think it's in the perfect spot in the immediate build-up to the Masters, because this is when players are trying to peak, yeah? And where it used to be in May after the Masters and before the US Open, it just kind of got hidden.
I think
that's this spot in March is the perfect spot for it, because we are seeing players playing or trying to play their peak golf 4 weeks before the Masters. Now, we will be doing a Masters research podcast. That is always our biggest podcast of the year. We need to put in the diary exactly when we're going to actually pull that podcast together. But we are definitely doing a dedicated research Masters pod. Looking at the prices right now, DJ's favourite at 8-1. DeChambeau is at 11. Rahm at 12. JT now at 12s. McIlroy at 14s. This is the bit that Barry laughs. Spieth at 16s. And then we've got Brooks Koepka at 18s with Xander at 20s. And everyone bar those are at 25 or above. What do you think we've learnt for the Masters in the last couple of weeks? We need people that are absolutely striping it with their greens in regulation, really, if we're being honest.
Yeah. Yeah. You can see the rationale for Spieth dropping so short over the last few weeks.
He has a heartbeat.
And he's clear, you know, he's hitting far more fairways. He seems far more controlled about his game than he has done for a long, long time. The long putting, the mid-range putting, you know, the kind of putts that you associate with Jordan Spieth making are generally starting to drop. And that's exciting for him. It's exciting for golf, I think. He's a bit short now. Looking at the betting, I'd like to have taken perhaps a little bit longer. But you can't have the benefit of that kind of foresight, because it wasn't so long ago. He was way off the charts. So I can see why he's been backed in. All the names and all of the prices you read there all seem a little bit on the short side to me. And we often get this, don't we, with the anti-post,
isn't it? Yeah.
The anti-post this year have been terrible for the most part, bar the odd one or two nuggets. And they've been, not that I've been looking, because, you know, you look at a few early on and you realise the bookies are just not engaging on those long-term markets. I mean, you got a great one with Tony for the US Open, Steve. I took him for the Masters at 25s, thinking he was never going to be longer than that.
I wasn't going to mention it. He's at 33s now. We bet 365, but I wasn't going to say that.
I had a good run of made cuts going on the anti-post bets where the value kind of increases, but you know, sometimes you're going to miss one.
That kind of price though is getting very tempting for Finau, isn't he? T4 Tony at the end of the day, majors. You know, it's a decent each way punt when you get into mid-30s for Finau around Augusta. I mean, I tipped him up last year. I think it was 35s we got in November. Didn't play great, but I'm just looking at greens in regulation numbers. Last three outings here, so we're going back to the WGC. I'm seeing Colin Morikawa in second spot at a concession. Victor Hovland was second. Brooks Koepka was in sixth on his last outing for greens in reg. I then go to the Arnold Palmer. Shane Lowry topped it. Lee Westwood was second for GIR. Bryson was third. And then I go to last week at the Players. John Rahm topped greens in regulation with, listen to this, Mark Leishman. So that could be a serious signal. Leishman topped GIR. And we also had Jordan Spieth in a tie for sixth for greens in regulation with Lee Westwood. And that's the thing. Spieth's long game is getting so much better.
Yeah.
So it's all starting to boil up. Yeah.
Just eyeballing it, you know. Forget the stats for a second. Just eyeballing his game, it looks, from tee to green, looks far, far stronger than it has done for an awful long time.
He's hitting just so many more greens now, Spieth, and fairways. So, yeah, interesting. We are bubbling up towards the Masters. Now, let's start this week's tips with the magical Kenya Open, Paul. So, over to you for this one.
Yes, the magical Kenya Open. Start of a two-week stint in Kenya, actually. Both of them being played on the same course. As we've seen that kind of scenario a few times, haven't we, since lockdown. So we're here this week, we're here next week. Importantly, next week's Kenya Savannah Classic starts on Tuesday. So they're playing, literally playing Thursday to Sunday this week, Monday off, then they're playing Tuesday through Friday. So it's going to be an absolute mad rush next week for both bookies and anyone previewing the event to actually digest what's happened this week in Kenya, get some thoughts and ideas, write them, talk about them, and then get it out in the ether before the event actually starts on Tuesday. So unfortunately, next week's pod will miss the Kenya Savannah Classic. So if you are intending to have a punt on that, you'll need to pop along to the website on Monday. I'd expect Monday mid-afternoon, tea time over in the UK, something like that. And then you'll have a few hours before the Kenya Savannah Classic starts next Tuesday. We've also got the World Match Play next week as well. That starts Wednesday, so it's going to be an absolute...
You've got a busy week, Mr. Williams. A very busy week, yeah.
It's going to be a challenging one next week, isn't it? Mm. But yeah, on to this week. So this week's normal. This week starts Thursday, so let's not overcomplicate things right now. We've got a full field of 156 this week. Some of them European tour, some locals, and the numbers of them being made up some of those guys with partial status, those who missed out of Q school, that kind of thing. That leaves us with a field headed by Kurt Kitayama at 20-1. Not much 20-1 left, actually, generally 18s or shorter. Kali Samuya at 25-1, Guido Migliozzi at 25s, Matthias Schwab at 25s as well, George Katsia at 28s. Then you've got the likes of Aaron Rye, Chris Paisley, Jamie Donaldson at 30-1, Justin Harding, Nicholas Lemke, Roman Langask at 33s, Joost Lauwersen 35s and 40-1 bar. So that kind of gives you a rough idea of the quality of the field this week. And I suspect next week will be very, very similar as I said, playing on exactly the same piece of land next week too. This week playing at the Karen Country Club, that's hosted a few events over the years. Kenya Open, back on the Challenge Tour, if you want to do some research on it, 2004 to 2008. Also 2013 to 2016, that was the Kenya Open on the Challenge Tour. Karen Masters on the Sunshine Tour in 2018 and 2019. And of course, this event, which made its debut on the European Tour, the Magical Kenya Open in 2019, which was won by Guido Migliozzi.
I've got a question for you. Is it really that magical?
I'll tell you Sunday. It could be seriously magical, Steve.
It could be seriously magical, couldn't it, at that stage? Okay. Let's hope
it's magical. But yes, if you pop along to the website, if you want to have a look at some of this course history over the years, then we've aggregated all of that data from the Challenge Tour and the Sunshine Tour. And of course, the 2019 European Tour event, so you can see players who have played well on this track in the past. Now, the track itself is a short classical affair, 6,921 yards, par 71. Kikuyu fairways, Kikuyu rough, bent grass greens, quite quick for bent grass greens, actually. They got it up to 12.5 or so a couple of years ago, and we're expecting something similar again this week, which is quite quick for a European Tour event. The holes are tree lined, but not claustrophobically so. We're not talking Valderrama here, and you're talking more something similar to kind of an Italian Open where there are trees around, but it is it's not madly tight. Saying that, the fairways are quite thin. What you tend to find with this is you've got skinny fairways, fair amount of rough, and then you've got the trees. So if you miss the fairways, then you're more likely to be in rough than you are to be blocked out by trees. And then if you're seriously wayward, as you often get in an Italian Open, that's when you'll be in some serious trouble. If you look at the events that have been played here, winning scores range between 10 under and all the way up to 26 under. Now, for the Challenge Tour events and the Sunshine Tour events, they play this as a par 72. For the European Tour, they play it as a 71. They literally just change one of the fives to a four. So when Guido won a couple of years back, his 16 under total should be a fairly good guide for what we should expect again this week. So somewhere in that kind of region, I would have thought, would be the winning total, particularly as we've got very similar conditions this week as to what we had a couple of years ago. The weather's set fair, sunny, 80 Fahrenheit there or thereabouts in the afternoons. The wind picks up to maybe 10 or 15 miles an hour in the afternoons too, but nothing too excessive for the players, and certainly not the kind of conditions that we saw last week in Qatar, which were quite tough. We do have some stats, some skill stats from the two Karen Masters that were on the Sunshine Tour and also the 2019 event here. And again, I've listed those in my preview. Interesting to see that everyone, I mean, literally, if you go through the field, everyone struggled to hit fairways around here. They are quite tight. And to give you an idea, Guido hit 42.9% of fairways on his way to victory. So less than half of the fairways were hit, but he still managed to get a relatively high greens in regulation stat. So it's one of those events where you can, one of those courses where you can recover from the rough. And those players that are more comfortable in that kind of scenario, those are perhaps used to missing more fairways, but finding a high number of greens, even from off of the straight and narrow, should be quite comfortable with this, I think. You need to scramble and putt reasonably well. They are smallish greens, smallish bent grass greens. So you're going to find you're going to miss a few. And then when you do, you're going to need to be decent in terms of getting up and down. And, of course, making those putts on the bent grass greens as and when you can. When it plays as a par 72, the par 5s are really critical here. You can see that from the numbers from all of the lower tier events that are being played here. Of course, it's a par 71, but even so, Guido's 8 under total for the par 5s when he won here a couple of years back was amongst the highest. So par 5 scoring, again, is going to be something that you need to be looking at. I think there's an interesting stretch on the course. Actually, if you go between the 6th hole and the 12th hole, you've got a par 5, then 4 straight sub 400 yard par 4s, and then another couple of par 5s back to back. So you've got a very scorable section of the course where players who started on the first hole can really get a bit of momentum going if they can start rattling off birdies and eagles during that stretch. So I really enjoyed it last time, I must say. It's an interesting course and it's an interesting setup. Going through Guido Migliozzi's win before, I mean, he won at 200-1, so that does give you not a great deal of clues, I guess, because his incoming form was miscut, miscut, 63 miscut, and it was his course debut. So if you managed to pick Guido out a couple of years back, then you did extremely well. I mean, he had won a couple of times on the Alps Tour before that, so there was some winning form in the not too distant past, but nothing very immediate to give you an idea that he was about to win. Before that, one of the Sunshine Tour events, 2018, won by Michael Palmer, he came in on this off the straight of 8 consecutive missed cuts, then won. So if you're looking at raw current form for this, then looking at some of the previous winners may well put you off a little bit with that. And most of the people who've won here equally don't have a great deal of course history either. So when you're fishing through trying to find some clues, it's a bit of a tough one, I guess. So you might find you're going to have to go more largely on spec this week. So for me, attacking pins from off the fairway, putting well on bent grass greens, par 5 scoring, as I mentioned, and a solid week on and around the greens is probably more important than having a sparkling incoming form and any semblance of course form as well, which is pretty few and far between this week. Anyway, I've backed 4. I've gone a little bit further down for the starting point this week. The first guy I've backed is Garrick Higo at 45-1. The young 21-year-old. And if you look down through the world rankings and rank all of the players in this field, he's ranked 5th in terms of world ranking. But you have to go down to about 20th spot, 18th, 20th in the betting to find him. And I think he deserves a little bit more respect. I think he deserves a lot more respect than that, personally. 4 wins so far in 41 professional starts, so winning 1 in 10 events, admittedly at lower levels generally, but he did win the Open de Portugal, that co-sanctioned Challenge Tour, European Tour affair that we saw in September. you know, and we've seen a few of these guys who've won post-lockdown get a second win now, haven't we? We've seen Antoine Rosner last week, courtesy of that mad 60-foot putt on the final hole.
That was so beautiful. Oh,
it's just incredible. You got a feel for the guys at back Guido, because you're looking at a 60-foot putt and you're thinking, well, there's far more chance of him three-putting this than making it.
For sure. Yeah. What a moment.
Yeah. I guess it, you know, if you'd have been on him, that would have been one of those absolute mad rushes to have seen your player do that. But yeah, we've seen Rosner do that and get a couple of wins. We've seen John Catlin, Christian Bezuiden, who won a couple, didn't he, at the back end of last year. Sam Horsfield won twice as well. So seeing another player get a second European Tour win in quick succession wouldn't surprise me in the slightest. He was fifth here on the Sunshine Tour back in 2019. He'd won his previous two starts consecutively, so I think you can let him off for not making it three wins on the trot. But fifth on the track is a positive bit of form regardless. And some of his form at the back end of last year in decent company was good. A 14th at the Earth course on his debut was impressive. 19th last week in Qatar as well. It's only a Saturday round of 77 in the wind that really blew him off target. Otherwise, he would have been far higher finishing last week. Happy to play from the rough. If you look at, I ranked the entire field as the differential between their current rolling accuracy stats versus their greens in regulation to kind of get a feel as to the players that were more comfortable hitting greens from off the fairway. And Higo was one of the players at the very top of that stat that I produced. And he was top 20 for par 5 scoring last year on the European Tour. I mean, adding it all together, he ticked an awful lot of boxes for a 45-1 shot. So I was quite happy to take Garrick as my headline this week. I've also backed Joachim B. Hansen. And I guess he's a player that I've been warming to over time. Go back historically and he'd have been one of those guys that I'd have looked at and said, you know, I'm not backing him, no chance of actually converting on a Sunday. Kind of flat as to deceive and perhaps hasn't got the bottle to convert these opportunities. But he's hit 30 now and I think he's starting to show some more resolve, some more maturity. And certainly now that he's got a win on the European Tour, I think he can go on further and further from there. It all kind of kicked off when he finished 7th at Wentworth last year, and not long after his 30th birthday, actually. And his previous performances at Wentworth were miscut, and then he finished 7th in decent company, which was good. Clearly spurred him on, because he won the Joburg Open a couple of starts later. And you look at both of those tracks, both tree-lined, both bent grass greens, correlate quite nicely with this week, I think. And both times, both of those events, his approach play was strong. And we saw more evidence of his decent approach play last week in Qatar. He finished 9th. He was 4th for strokes gained approach, 1st for greens in regulation last week in Qatar as well. So that was impressive. And, you know, in tough conditions, the JB Hansen of old would have folded, in my view. And instead, he kind of hung around, produced a field-leading greens in regulation performance, finished 9th. So yeah, I was quite impressed with that, I must say. And, you know, not really his bag. He's far more comfortable usually when there's a score to be made out there. Does have a bit of course form. He finished 19th here on the Challenge Tour back in 2015. And in reality, the putter was dead cold last week. And again, that's not his game. He can be an absolute devastating putter when he's playing well. So if he finds a bit of form with a flat stick this week on the bent grass greens that should suit, then again, 50-1, I like the look of that. A couple of longer shots. Gaganjeet Bhullar, the Indian, opened mad price, 110-1 in a couple of places. 130 on the exchange he was. And this is for a player who, when you look down the stats, is fairly obvious, really. You know, if you're looking from a current and course form perspective. Second last week in Qatar. Fifth here when they played the Magical Kenya Open in 2019. You put those two stats together and you look at a player who's won, 10 PGTI events over in India, 9 Asian Tour wins over his over the years. He's got a European Tour win at Fiji as well. He won the PGTI Tour Championship in December, 4 events ago. So this is a guy who's clearly got the ability to get over the line. Got some decent current form, got some decent course form, and he was a three-figure shot to open. 80-1 now is about the best you'll get, and he's been backed in heavily. So if you do fancy him, then I'll jump on quickly. But it just seemed like an absolute no-brainer for me, that. And the 130 on the exchange early doors was a mad price, I've got to say.
You've stolen my thunder, because you'll say, who do you guys fancy? That was the one that was absolutely just jumping off the laptop screen at me. So that was going to be my bet, Gargan Jeep Bula. I mean, this is it, 10 PGTI victories and 8 Asian Tour victories, is it?
Yeah.
Nine.
One of them was co-sanctioned.
Fiji International.
Yes, right.
It's not as if this guy can't win, and he won India's number one event in December. So, course form, I can't believe that price.
No, I looked at it, and I was expecting maybe 40-50-1, something like that. So when he was chalked up 110-1 first off, I thought, mad. And so I think generally by the time people are listening to this, 66 is probably going to be the number, but. This guy's got a live chance. I mean, if you look at his stats, he lost some strokes off the tee last week, which I don't think is such a bad thing here.
No.
But solid everywhere else. You know, his approach was good. His putting was good. His around the greens was good.
Yeah, 15th for approach. He was like Seve around the greens, and he was tee to green, top 10, and 9th for putting. It's like, what don't you like about that?
No. He's third for strokes gained approach here back in 2019 when he finished 5th. It's a funny one, Buller, because... You've mentioned him
in the past. He could be a real breakout kind of player, couldn't he?
Yeah, he was. You know, if you'd have asked me 2 years ago to describe his game, then I'd have said greens and regulation merchant, very accurate, can't putt. And if you look at his stats now, it's almost flipped on its head. If you look at the raw, the old fashioned style stats, then you know he looks like he's struggling to hit fairways. He looks like he struggles to hit greens. He looks like his short game and his putting is incredible. And you know, watching him last week, some of the up and downs and some of the putting was outstanding. But then you look at it from a strokes gain perspective, and you know, as we've just gone through the stats there, you know, he's clearly picking up strokes on approach. He's clearly picking up strokes from tee to green. And the only bit that's letting him down a little bit is from off the tee. But if the penalty here for a bit of a wayward drive isn't that much, then
that's right.
It gives him a chance. It fits
perfectly, doesn't it? Yeah,
I think he's got a great chance this week, Buller. And the final one, bit of a pun, Andre Lisa, the Czech, 125-1. I think he's one of these emerging stars. 4 wins in his last 27 starts. And again, all at lower grade, of course. But that didn't stop Guido when he won here in 2019. As I said, he'd won a couple of Alps Tour events. This Andre Lisa, he won a couple of times on the Pro Golf Tour. That gave him a start on the Challenge Tour. He became the first Czech golfer to win on the Challenge Tour when he won the Challenge de España back in November. He won the Challenge Tour Grand Final on his next start, and he's now the first Czech to get a full card in history. Bit of European Tour experience from back into last year. 44th at the Austrian Open, 13th at the Euram Bank Open as well. And I think he's worth a chance. You know, you don't know sometimes how these guys are going to step up. But we've seen with a number of players. You know, Guido's a great example. Matt Wallace is another great example. These guys who get into a winning habit on a lower level. And then step up, and actually, how much different, how much better is this than a top level Challenge Tour event this week? It's not a million miles off, I tell you. It's in my view, you'll feel quite comfortable here for 125-1 shot. So, I mean, if it was a horse, of course, you'd probably say he's a progressive sort who could handle the step up in class this week, and perhaps he will handle that step up in class and give us a contending performance. So, yeah, they're my four. Andre Lisa, 125s, Gaganjeet Bula, whatever price you can get on him now. Joachim B. Hansen, 50-1, and Garrick Higo, 45-1. So you fancy a bit of Bula as well. Anyone you fancied, Barry?
I haven't done enough research into this, but that has never stopped me having a bet before. So while you've been talking, I've been coming up with an approach to this. And I decided without any reason or rhyme to just focus on putting for this week. Mm-hmm. I figured they'll just like let them have a go, shoot some scores. So I maxed out your bent grass positive, birdie performance, putting and putts per round on the predictor. and it spat out Lagergren at 66-1. Actually, just got him at 80-1 on Paddy Power, which is nice. Dale Whitnell, Chris Paisley, and Alejandro Canizares are the top four there. Jamie Donaldson is fifth. So I just backed the three at the highest odds and went with that. So Lagergren, Whitnell, and Canizares.
Yeah, interesting with Canizares because, you know, he's attached to Valderrama.
I knew. This is Paul's favourite. Why did you mention him? We can wait for another 10 minutes. He loves Alejandro Canizares.
Yeah. He never performs when I put him up on a tree line track.
But, don't touch him, Paul. Stay away from his mind this week.
But no, he could like it. I like your approach, Barry.
I'm probably going to play some pretty loose bets this week on the horses, so I figure like may as well just adopt that attitude and throw a few loose ones on the golf and see what happens.
It doesn't come through in your accent, Paul, but are you related to Alejandro Canizares? You love the bloke.
No, absolutely. No, and you know, I can't remember ever having actually won a bean on him, but...
No. You did go for a long stretch of putting him up virtually every second week, and this is the week. He's going to break through. And
this would be phenomenal. I'm doubling my stake on him now. Just so I can buy Paul like a proper bottle of champagne, not a snipe, which I'll get him if he does win. So, yeah.
Thanks, I've got Barry. To say, I've come got here, to Paul, say... Actually. If you look at the prices, I think Higo's a good bet as well. I do say that because he's very, very... He hangs around leaderboards and he's done well at quite a strong level on the European Tour. Mm. Yeah. And he's got clearly the Sunshine Tour background. He just, you know, why would he be a longer price than Callum Hill, for example, that hasn't done a great deal over the last sort of few months?
No. I agree. You know, you talk about the course setup, Kikuyu fairways, Kikuyu rough. You know, the South Africans are going to feel more than comfortable in that kind of setup, aren't they? So
absolutely.
And as I said, he's the fifth highest ranked player in the field. Yet you have to go. You know, you have to scroll down quite a bit before you find him in the betting, which just feels out of kilter to me. So
okay. So I think I'm going to have a bit of Higo and a bit of Bula. Those are my two. For the European Tour.
We need to stop cannibalizing each other's bets. You know, if we divide and conquer, one of us is going to be happy each week for sure.
Steve, can you cannibalize Barry's, please?
I'm not backing Alejandro Canizares, I can assure you of that.
Oh, dear.
Right. Now, Bet Boyle Sports are 7 places each way, 50 odds on your particular tournament, equal best. Stuff. Over on the PGA Tour, the Honda Classic this week, they are, again, a standout 10 places each way of 50 odds. And as we know, they're running a Road to Augusta promotion where they've been running 10 places now each way on the PGA Tour for a number of weeks. They are the leading bookmaker in 2021. For additional each way places, they are offering more than Paddy Power, who for many years have led the way in this particular additional each way places arena. So it's just to point out to you guys, if you have not got Boyle Sports account and you are a regular golf punter, you're missing out. If you want that opportunity, 10 places each way, 50 odds, if you're in that space where you want to maximise your each-way return opportunities and not have the strongest price, Boyle Sports are a must-have at the moment when it comes to golf betting. They have specific UK and Republic of Ireland sign-up offers for those of you 18+. So come to Golf Betting System and you can look at what offers are available for you with Boyle Sports this week. Yes, the Honda Classic. We have some tournaments on the PGA Tour. You know, it's just a scheduling thing. The Honda Classic has always been one of those tournaments where it has a strong European field. Up until this year, the Honda Classic has always been the first of the Florida swing. But this year, it finds itself clearly after Bay Hill, after Concession, after the Players and the week before the World Golf Championship match play down in Austin, Texas. So the field this week is weak, it has to be said. It's not the strongest. Berger, Im is second favourite. Berger the favourite at 10-1. He's at, not my cup of tea at 10-1, Daniel Berger. Im at 14s. We then got Joaquin at 20s. Westwood at 22s. He's playing Augusta today with Shane Lowry. I think he was up there Monday and Tuesday having some recreational rounds out up at Augusta National. And we've got Lowry at 28-1. He's also at that price with Russell Henley. If you fancy a bit of value, Adam Scott at 30-1. And then the likes of Brendan Steele and Cameron Tringali, Taylor Gooch and Chris Kirk at 40-1. That kind of shows you the strength of field we are dealing with. It hasn't been helped overnight with the news that Doc Redman, Scott Piercy and Gary Woodland have all been withdrawn from the tournament, testing positive for COVID. And I think, didn't we have Brian Harman, WD, after making an absolute pot full of money at the Players last week as well? Harman was an early WD as well, wasn't he? I will update the key skill statistics with those latest WDs on the preview available at Golf Betting System. So, yeah, Honda Classic. Windswept always is. They're playing this at the Champions Course. PGA National, Palm Beach Gardens in Florida. It's basically just down the road from the golfing commune that is Jupiter, Florida. So, it's one of the courses on this stretch of the Atlantic coast that the Players know very well. The very famous Bears Club is pretty much next door to this, where a lot of the big names do their practicing, because clearly, you know, following the footsteps of what Tiger Woods has done in this for this part of Florida. But yes, it's a 7,125-yard golf course. It is a par 70, so only 8 looks this week at par 5s. I categorise it as a technical golf course. 7,000 square feet average, Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass greens. They were actually rebuilt and renovated for the 2019 renewal. So this will be the third year of these new greens. But this golf course is just it's a beast. I mean, the last 3 years on tour, it ranked second, fifth and third for difficulty on the PGA Tour. And there's no let up for these guys. 15 of the holes feature significant water hazards. So no Tony Finau in the field this week. He doesn't seem to be a regular visitor to the Champions Course at PGA National. But, you know, it just sows seeds, doesn't it? What we do find, though, this week is that the fairways are significantly thinner than last week at Sawgrass as well. So not only do you have the same visual intimidation of water on virtually every hole, you've also got the fact that the fairways are up to 5 to 7 yards thinner than they are at TPC Sawgrass. So at 300-yard carry, the fairways last week at Sawgrass were 30 yards wide. This week, 25 yards wide. Thick, heavy Bermuda grass, rough, and some pretty significant wind in play this week as well. I was seeing yesterday, I was seeing up to 20 to 25 miles an hour wind on Thursday, and up to 30 miles an hour on Sunday, and that is really going to sort out a few of these guys.
Yeah, a par is going to be a really good score some of those days, isn't it? At that kind of level, with the difficulty of the track as it is and the water around, it's going to make it, as you said, a proper technical test, I think, this week.
I'll have a little look at Windfinder when one of you two take up the cudgels later on, and we'll see exactly what the wind forecast is going to be. But I mean, winning scores here tell you everything, don't they? I shouldn't really say this, but I've actually got a half decent record in this tournament. I've had quite a few winners here, Thomas and Fowler. It's a grinders tournament. You've only got to look at the winning scores here. I mean, Sung Jae-im last year won this at 6 under. Keith Mitchell, 9 under. JT, 8 under. Ricky Fowler won here at 12 under. And that year, the golf course was soft. There was no wind. So it was the easiest this PGA National would ever play. He won at 12 under. With wind, there hasn't been a lot of rain here. I could see this being low, a real high scoring event again. You know, that 6-7 under par. I don't see this being 12 under. I think it's going to be single digits.
A bit of wind coming, Steve, yeah. Just looking here. There's a little bit of wind coming.
I think so.
Yeah, like 14, 15, you know, knots. Sorry, I'm on windy.com, kilometers an hour, but it's going to be a southerly wind Thursday, going to be a westerly wind Friday, calmer but northerly wind Saturday, and then an east northeast on Sunday. So that golf, they're going to see that golf course in all different ways if it sticks to that. Who's striking the ball sweet?
Well, I can tell you someone that's really hitting it sweet at the moment, and that's Shane Lowry. And I know you and I were chatting about him on Sunday as he finished in the top 10. And you said to me, wouldn't it be great if we could get 50 to 1 on Shane Lowry this week? And I thought you'd been a tad hopeful.
A little optimistic.
Yeah, I know. I was hoping for a little bit of give back, you know, but...
I don't think you hadn't seen the state of the field, had you?
No. And it makes sense, you know, the long game has been in very good shape recently, and it's been the putting that's been a nightmare for him. He switched to right hand below left after most of his career the other way, with left hand below right, and... it seemed to work quite well. There was a few iffy putts in there, but that's going to happen when you're changing the entire way the entire putting feel you've had for a long time. But that, it was nice to see Shane actually put a good week together, because you can see how much it's been bugging him and irking him for a while. And, you know, there's probably a little bit of everything going on, but you see it with guys who win their first major. It can affect them. It can affect their game. Great to see him back. Shame he's not 50 to 1.
So up to 25 miles an hour Thursday. It then changes direction. It comes, as you said, it comes from more of the west on Friday. It's down to about 14 miles an hour, but that's enough to keep them honest. Again, 15 to 20 Saturday. Sunday, it keeps changing. Sometimes you're seeing 30 miles an hour, and at the moment it's saying nothing more than 15 miles an hour. But I still think that's 8-9 under par mark. And if the greens are really releasing, we could see anything as low as, 5-6 under par. I just think, we were going through some GIR numbers earlier in the podcast, weren't we? Arnold Palmer Invitational, Shane Lowry, 75% of greens in regulation. He was first at the Arnold Palmer. And then last week at the Players, he was still in the top 19 for greens in regulation. And, open champion, guy that clearly plays well in the wind, guy that can scramble fantastically well. If he can just keep that positive putting momentum going change in his grip, I think Lowry's a very good bet this week. He was actually first on my card, it has to be said, of my five. But yeah, I've jumped ahead to Shane. But yes, I think we need grinders this week. We definitely need grinders. And as you said, Barry, people that are flushing their irons right now isn't a bad strategy. The other thing I did note, when you look at winners here recently, Im, when he won this, was 34 for driving distance on the PGA Tour. He could get it out there, 305 driving distance average. Keith Mitchell's a bomber, isn't he? Justin Thomas was in the top 10 for driving distance the year he won this, and Ricky Fowler was actually at that point 7th for driving distance entering this tournament in 2017. So a bit of oomph off the tee isn't a bad strategy here either. And I mean, Shane isn't the longest, but he can certainly get it way out there when he wants to. Tends to be sort of longer sort. So yeah, for me, I've always related this to a US Open. And you've only got to look at the winners here, haven't you? You know, we've got Justin Thomas. He's done well in a US Open before. Fowler had done well before winning this. Adam Scott. I mean, he's a long driver of the golf ball. Padraig Harrington in 2015. Yes, he was 400-1. Yes, it was completely left field. But then, you know, he had a fourth and a couple of fifths in US Opens prior to winning the Honda Classic. Even Michael Thompson, 2013, he goes against the trend of bombers, but Michael Thompson had finished second at the US Open in 2012 behind, that would have been Webb Simpson, I believe. Was it Webb Simpson 2012? Or have I got that wrong? Don't know. Yeah, it was 2012 Webb Simpson because McIlroy won it in 11. And there you go, McIlroy's won here. He won the 2011 US Open. So there's definitely a US Open feel to this as well. Any other sort of details from your side in terms of PGA National or what you think of the Honda Classic?
I think I do always associate with one where you come back and look at this when you are starting to do your research for the tougher majors. So, as you say, the US Open, it's always one that's kind of a correlation the other way around as well. So yeah, now I can see your logic there. And, players that are comfortable not making birdie every third hole, you know, those that are comfortable with the mindset that is quite accepting of making a par and moving on is kind of the way to approach it, I think.
I think as Woodland finished, I mean, Woodland's withdrawal, yeah? I think Woodland had a top two here, didn't he? Have a check for me. I'm pretty sure Woodland's had a decent finish here as well. And clearly he went on to do quite well at a US Open. So, you know, there are lots of US Open trends and themes to this golf course, as you would expect.
Yeah, Woodland's, sixth, second and eighth here over the years. So, yes.
Kind of says everything, doesn't it?
Mm.
Right. There was one guy in my analysis that was absolutely screaming. There were a couple of guys, actually, that were screaming back at me, but I could only take one. I've probably taken the wrong one. People will laugh at me. I actually thought that Phil Mickelson played some really nice golf last week at the Players. If there was one golf course that doesn't suit Phil Mickelson, it's TPC Sawgrass these days. But he actually had a decent finish there. He did a damn sight better than his playing. Was he playing with Tony Finau in that first round? I did say to you guys, God, yeah, that's going to be bad for Finau with Mickelson in his group. I didn't quite expect five over through the first three, but wow.
But Phil was swinging that kind of real smooth, like 75-80% for a lot of things. I wonder.
And hitting some fairways, Barry, and hitting some very nice approaches.
It looked really good. Did somebody get out an old pocket watch and hypnotize him? Because there was like seemed like a reluctance to really let loose. I mean, maybe it's a mindset change. Maybe it was trying to play the course with a little less crazy aggression, but. God, if he did that a bit more often, week on week, right now, just visually, it looks like he'd contend a bit more because the wild shots disappear.
Yeah, absolutely. Played some really nice golf. I had it was a toss up between this individual that I actually went with and Phil Mickelson. I probably should have gone for Phil because that's the way the coin keeps falling. But I actually went for Jim Furyk, Paul's old favourite. I mean, I know he hasn't got the length, but. His numbers on my 8-week trackers are phenomenal. Second for driving accuracy, second for greens in regulation, first for strokes gained on approach, fifth for strokes gained around the green, first for strokes gained tee to green, and first for strokes gained current form. How could I not put Jim Furyk in there? 125-1, 8 places each way, 50 odds with Betfair Sportsbook.
On a track that's going to demand a high level of grinding mentality. I can see the logic.
Said last week on the Players pod that it was 2019 at the Players was mad. You had Rory McIlroy winning it and Jim Furyk finished second. And I said, yeah, well, Jim Furyk had actually finished ninth at the Honda Classic 2 weeks beforehand. And that's the point. At this kind of golf course, short, par 70, grind city, people are going to be hitting water all over the place. Jim Furyk just plotting around, hitting a fairway, hitting a green, and making the odd putt. It's the putt these days that holds Jim back. If he can make, if he can putt strokes gain neutral or just a little bit positive, Furyk could easily get in the top 10 this week. So yeah, I plump for Furyk. There's from what I saw of Phil last week, there's a lot of positive sides on Phil Mickelson as well. One up from that, US Open history, tick. Guy that hits tons of greens, tick. Guy that's got a good Florida record, tick. I mean, I'm seeing 8th and 7th at Doral, 3rd, 2nd and 10th at Bay Hill, 7th at TPC Sawgrass, and this on this particular golf course, he's had a 12th, a 4th and a 12th. He lives in Jupiter, Florida, so he must play around here fairly regularly. He's 7th for strokes gained approach and 10th for strokes gained tee to green. Not in my trackers, but across the whole PGA Tour season to this point. And we must be, what, halfway through, if not a tiny bit more? Keegan Bradley. Keegan Bradley. And he's the sort that could just pop up this week and just grind his way around it. The other positive thing that we've seen from, if you want a bulky putter, if you want a Boo Weekly type putter that can be absolutely Sergio Garcia-like with his putting, Bradley's right up there. But the last two outings, 1.4 positive, and last week at the Players, 2.3 strokes gained positive for his putting at the Players. So I put Keegan Bradley a point each way at 50-1, Betfred 8 place each way at 50 odds. Got that US Open background, a major winner. And he does, let's face it, he knows how to get over the line. He won that BMW Championship a couple of years ago, which was a FedEx Cup playoff event, which was absolutely major strength field. You know, 70 of the best players in the world. And was it 2019? He went in a head-to-head that particular week with Ches Reavy. Was that the, were you on Ches that week, weren't you, at the Travellers? Was that right?
The week, I'd been on him the week before.
At Pebble Beach, So he can, you know, Bradley can mix it in these weaker fields. Bradley can easily mix it. And as we've seen recently, we've been putting him up first round leaders and we've been saying that his game is percolating. I think this could be a week where Bradley actually puts four half decent rounds. I mean, if he can, if his bad round can be par or a 71 and he can let the rest of his golf play as positively as it has been recently, I think Bradley could be a real feature. Anyone at, I mean, I've gone in reverse order just to change it up. Anyone's at prices for you two down in that in the bigger price range?
Yeah, I've only backed one, and he kind of fits and kind of doesn't in some respects, but I've gone with him anyway. Johnny Vegas I've backed. Now, I guess in the past, again, he's a kind of player that I maybe have not associated massively with the grind, but he's starting to impress me more in that respect. He impressed me at Puerto Rico as well. He hung around, didn't he, at the back end of that tournament, finished second in the end.
Made birdie on 18 when he had to.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. But if you look at his record here, 7 out of 8 cuts made. He finished 4th in 27, saying he closed with a 64. He was first round leader here in 2019. He opened with a 64. And there's been some good signs with his game. First for strokes going off the tee at Pebble Beach. Made the cut last week at the Players. Clearly, this is lower grade this week compared to that. And he just loves Jack Nicklaus tracks. If you, again, going back to the predictor model, if you pump in just the Nicklaus variable into the predictor, then Johnny Vegas sits at the very top. So
two wins at Glen Abbey will do that for you.
Absolutely, yeah. He's got a, you know, clearly gets on with the style of tracks. He's won a Bermuda grass greens in the past. I particularly like the 7,300 in DraftKings for Vegas, but I have backed him 80-1 with 8 places as well outright. So. So yeah, that's kind of my lone dart at the moment. I do like the look of Jim Furyk as a player who could seriously hang about as, you know, if and when that Sunday becomes particularly brutal and a war of attrition. I mean, he's that kind of mentality. So if he's in the mix, then you can see that kind of player, that kind of mentality helping him to stay where he is as other players are falling apart around him.
thing with Furyk, Genesis Invitational, his last outing, that was loaded, yeah? I mean, that was a major field. 144 of the best players in the field, all paying homage to Tiger Woods. You know, he was hanging around top 20 the whole tournament on a tough golf course where power, you know, actually power at Riviera helps, but he was just plotting his way around. If he can actually putt reasonably well this week on Bermuda grass, which I think has always been his better surface, I think Furyk's a definite shout. And Vegas, yeah, I get Vegas. He was seventh for greens in regulation in Puerto Rico, his last outing.
Yeah, there's some good
signs. What about you, Barry? Sorry, yeah, what about you, Barry?
I've backed Shane. Good annoying as it is that it's so short, but the whole thing makes sense.
What price did you get on Shane out of interest?
I got boosted from 28 to 30 to 1, so yeah, it's 28s effectively, yeah. Look, it's fine. If go for it. beyond that, I kind of skipped down a little bit. So, a little punt on Harold Varner, striking the iron as well, and approached well last week. Harry Higgs was shown some good signs of life, I thought, and it's more like an affinity bet than a specific, like, nails down reason. Yeah, grabs him at 125 to 1.
He was always in that sort of top 25 area at the Players, and you wouldn't have thought that for Harry Higgs, would you? So he played really well last week at Sawgrass.
Yeah, it was. There was
hanging around.
Enough in there for sure, yeah. Mm. Then a couple of others that kind of caught my eye. K.H. Lee.
Yep.
So he had a decent week. He was 25th for greens in reg. Short game
wizard, as we saw at Phoenix, where he was second.
I mean, just across the board, his stats were good last week. So, I think, you know, you're going into a course like PGA National, like, the whole game's going to have to be pretty well-rounded.
Yeah.
So that was that, and then these are just all little small bets because I'm kind of unsure about where to sit this week. But JT Poston had a dreadful front nine on his round on Thursday, and from that point he was a lot under for the tournament. He finished 5 under, and he was 5 over for that front nine. So, you know, play that in flat level par, he's right in the mix.
Yeah.
I'll save you, Barry. Last 54 holes.
Thank you.
At the Players, Justin Thomas was the top, shot 203 strokes. Paul Casey was 204. Lee Westwood was 206. JT Poston, 207 strokes, yeah.
See, yeah, I knew that. Thanks, Steve.
So he was only four off bacon. Justin Thomas across the last 3 rounds. That's decent performance from Poston.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, he'd won super hot round of putting, but... Yeah. You get the super bad rounds as well. So, so JT Poston was the other one. That's enough for me. The Bradley shout, I like it. I've kind of had him half back to the last couple of weeks. And
you have?
Kind of, yeah. Like, just first round leaders and just, I don't know.
He's percolating.
If he is, yeah, and I'm wondering, is he going to percolate to a win, or is he just going to percolate away? Because he's done this a couple of times recently where, you know, he's showing form and you think, oh, he might be back, and then he just disappears again. So maybe I'm jumping ship a week too early, maybe not. We'll see. But if you know, Steve, maybe, you know, this could be your week.
Could be. Let's hope so. Needs to be. I've gone for Brendan Steele, a real horse for a course, absolutely striping it at Arnold Palmer a few weeks ago, where he was in the top 5 for greens in regulation. I just like, when you look at Steele, his record here, 11th, 14th, 14th, 4th, and then you look at his record at the Open de France, for some reason he comes across to the French Open a lot on the European Tour, and we know Le Golf National, another course like this, brutal, water everywhere.
Lots of water, yeah.
Inland links, he's finished 7th, 7th and 6th on his 3 visits to Le Golf National.
Yeah.
It's a wonder they didn't put him in the Ryder Cup team, really, Team USA, wasn't it? Rather than these guys that were flashing it around in the water all the time. But yeah, Brendan Steele, point each way, 40 to 1 with Coral, 8 places. I've got Shane Lowry, 28 to 1 with Betfred, 8 places. And at the top, if there was one of the guys at the very top of the market that I had penciled in for this, and I was really pleased to see his name in the actual entry list, I think he's the sort that needs a weaker field to get his second PGA Tour victory, but undoubtedly he's a very talented individual. He showed for the first two rounds of the US Open at Wingfoot and then kind of fell away a little bit, but that kind of surprised me. I remember him finishing second to John Rahm and Dustin Johnson in Chicago last year in the FedEx Cup playoffs at... I always forget the name of the course that they play in Chicago. I've had a complete and utter brain fade. Olympia Fields. Finished third there in the BMW Championship. And that course, until they watered it for John Rahm on Sunday, was particularly... firm, fast and nasty. And he just comes to life on par 70s. He won at Old White TPC, and he's also had a fifth there. Second at Wailea this year, eighth at Colonial, fifth at TPC River Highlands, the Travellers in 2019. He actually favours par 70s over par 72s, which is rare these days. Mm. Joaquin Niemann. I just had to take him. 22-1 I got on him. 8 places each way, 50 odds with William Hill. He's being heavily backed this week. I'm seeing him as short now as 12-1 with Unibet, which is a ridiculous price. That's way out of kilter. Someone's been smoking someone at Unibet's office. You can still get 20-1 with him right now with William Hill or Betfred, 8 places each way of 50 odds. On Joaquin Niemann, I struggle. I mean, I'm seeing Daniel Berger 11-1, and I know that he's a four-time winner on the PGA Tour, great player. But there seems to be 10-1 on Berger and 20-1 on Niemann. That seems quite a big gap for me. I worry about Westwood. This is how many weeks straight now? 4 weeks, is it?
Yeah, and Cheltenham on as well at the same time.
Cheltenham on W World Match Play next week.
Little trip to Augusta, like with playing Shane. Yesterday, maybe today.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure his focus is going to be 100% this week. But
no, I think this could be the week where Westwood misses the cut. But he's done so well over the last few weeks. So yeah, go on. Sorry,
I was saying it could be the kind of event where he could pop up first round leader and then fade throughout the week as the last few weeks maybe catch up on him a bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, at that price, like, we're all going to happily let him go. The bookies are clearly petrified by his ability to finish as a bridesmaid at the moment.
If you're looking on pure statistics, the kind of player that plays well here, but he's been dog-awful last few outings, Cameron Davis, the Australian. Very talented individual. Top 10 here last year. Hits the ball a mile. Brilliant with his long irons and approach play. Davis could pop this week.
Yeah, he wasn't so bad. If you go back a couple of months, and he was doing some half decent form there, wasn't it?
Yeah,
sort of dropped off a little bit recently.
Absolutely. So that's us then. That's the Honda Classic and the magical Kenya Open in the history books, as far as the podcast is concerned. I hope your tips go well again this week, gentlemen.
Yes, you too. Best of luck.
I hope yours go well for the first time this year, Steve. it's going to happen. It's going to happen.
harsh.
I'm speechless. I knew I was... I mean, I knew last week I was absolutely scuppered after the first couple of hours, but I was holding on for Abraham Anser, a top 10 finish at 70-1, and then woke up on Sunday, looked to who he'd been teed with in his group, and I saw the... I just knew I was absolutely shot to pieces. Abraham Anser was grouped with Ryan Palmer in the final round of the Players' Championship. So that was, it was done. It was done at that point.
Yeah.
Absolutely done. So yeah. Yeah, we'll keep going. We'll get there eventually.
Yeah.
I hope, listeners, that your bets go well this week as well. We have the WGC match play next week, which is always a fun event. Paul's in the chair for that one. We also have the PGA Tour event that takes place in the Dominican Republic at the Corrales Championship. And don't forget, if you're an absolute golf betting addict, Paul will be pulling together some content for the second Kenyan event, which starts bizarrely next Tuesday. Which will be too indeed. Late for the pod. We'll be out to look at the leaderboard, Paul, as we're actually recording the podcast.
Yeah, we might have that explicit rating on there on next Tuesday morning.
We'll be a live reaction podcast.
Yeah, we'll be able to critique Paul's tips during the podcast. That's a new one.
I look forward to it.
Right, we'll see you again very soon, listeners. Don't forget, 5-star reviews, keep them coming, and we'll be back next week. I hope you will. See you soon. Bye-bye.